Hey, Robert and Duff. It's good seeing you. I have the agenda if you want me to share my screen just to help facilitate.
How does that work? So do we want to get, it's, you know, we got one more minute or so. I see we have some people dialing in without names, and so maybe what we can do is ensure if there's anyone from the public that they're identified and do that with introductions.
Okay, great. Yes, this is a public meeting and it's being recorded. So when we do introductions, if the chairs, want to do a roll call and we can go through.
Well, I got 11 a.m., so let's kick her off. Hey, Robert, if you don't mind, I can just start rolling through some things and jump in wherever you want.
Go for it.
If that works for you.
Go for it.
So, welcome everybody. This is the Friday, July 28th, 2023 Subcommittee for the Coastal Generation Distribution and Storage. I'm Duff Mitchell, the co-chair. We have Robert Venables, co-chair. Is Clay on? I do not hear him or see him. Is there any other AESTF members on? Okay, that being said, Michael, let me just turn over to you and we'll just quickly state who's all on the meeting just for the record.
Okay, thank you. I can certainly handle the contractors with Michael Baker. I'm Michael Yaffe. We also have my colleagues, Mark Lukin, Karn McGovery, Nick Verratt, Lauren Colhane, and then with Black and Beach, it's Huha Feng. And then the rest of the members, if there's anyone else that I left off from the contractor team, please let me know. If not, the rest of the members might be members of the public.
Soren Park. Oh, go ahead.
Soren Perrick and Mandy Jiang are joining from Black Beach.
And we have Josie Hartley on in place of Audrey Osterman for the AEA server.
Great. Is that temporarily or permanent now? In other words, is Audrey?
It should just be temporary. Audrey's on vacation.
Oh, fair enough.
On Monday.
I just got, I pinged Clay. He said he's in the waiting room trying to get in. So does he have the right link or is he still in the waiting room?
I don't see anyone in the waiting room.
I will forward it.
Can someone re-forward him the last email and maybe that's got a slightly different meeting room and he's going off an older one. I don't know, but we'll try to get him on board. While we're waiting for Clay, who's the 907-854-2824 number?
That's me, Josie. It's my audio. I'm connected with my phone.
Oh, great. Thanks. And then we have a T. Jimmy, which is a guest. I'm just trying to identify any potential public members. There's a meeting guest with just the name T. Jimmy. Is that, can you identify that's Tanya Jimmy. Okay. I see. That being said, is there any public members, on board that's not, a contractor or an ASTF member? Nope. Sounds like we do not have any public members. All right. So kickoff facilitation, we'll let Clay join here. Go ahead.
I saw Christopher Whitewell. I don't know if he's, I'm not sure what his role is.
Christopher, hi. Could you explain your role and who you represent?
Okay. I am in summer intern at Calista in the Government Relations Department.
What was the firm name? Your summer intern, Government Relations?
At Calista.
Oh, great. Well, thank you. Thank you, Christopher, for joining us.
Sure.
Clay Coughlin is now on the line.
Great. Well, welcome aboard, Clay. Hey, no problems. Glad you're on. So we just went through the introductions and we just went through a roll call. Kickoff facilitation, clarify purpose, deliverables, and responsibilities. So we had, and I don't know if this was a joint idea from AEA and contractors of some earlier what I'm going to call duty, purpose, deliverables, and responsibilities. And then I sent out to the subcommittee my thoughts on the changing the purpose and deliverables and responsibilities to make them a little more what I would call tactical in meeting the overarching goals and objectives of AO 345, the duties and responsibilities of the governor's, and it's my rendition of that, of where I see things going with what we have been put forward. So I kind of wanted to open that up for discussion, with Clay and with, Robert.
Duff and Robert, I believe this is the document. Would you like me to pull it up?
Sure, that'd be excellent, Michael.
Let me know if you want me to zoom in.
I just made them a little bit harder, more definable, so that we could put performance measures later, as well as a little more succinct in trying to come up with the outcome objectives that the governor's asking us to do. So all I did was take what we had before and kind of make them a little bit more harder or firmer, I guess is the word.
Yeah, Doug, I think I just made two small edits. First being in the second bullet, removing the word renewable in the first use, leaving it in the second use. Just there may be energy development that is not renewable that fits into the portfolio, hopefully very small, and next to nothing, but I didn't want to take anything off the table prematurely before we got started on that. And then the bullet about the 10-cent power, I don't know that one's that's not really explicit in the administrative order. It's aspirational. I'd rather not put that in the purpose, so it's not distraction. Just lowering the cost of energy. Just take out the 10-cent reference there, if you don't mind.
Yeah, Clay, what do you think about that?
I like that. I'll defer to Robert's comments.
Okay. Yeah, I'm good with that, but I'd like to just put under a comment. I think we need to have a goal because this is going to be too easy for us to work through this, and then we're not going to be lowering the cost. So I know I listened to the governor in his first opening of 10 cents of power. I know there's people that have rolled their eyes or people that have felt like that's not doable. And I know that I don't want to be fall on a sword if we fail to meet it, but I do I'm just going to say I like hard goals. Not that you're going to achieve them, but that's a benchmark. So what would we replace instead of 10 cents? Lowering the cost of energy is kind of really vague and aspirational. I could move a half a cent off somebody's power and they say, oh, you guys are wonderful and successful. But I think in the overarching, that wouldn't be successful. But
yeah,
anyways, what your thoughts?
Yeah, why don't we just start that bullet off with the word significantly, and then we can come back and refine this. This is a living document, but just say significantly lower the cost of energy, and then let's get some testimony, get some facts, get some ideas, and then we can get a little more aspirational and focused as we get into our next meetings.
Sounds like a great idea. No, I like that. I think that captures, and plus then we're doing a service to what the governor's trying to do. I mean, I'm trying to focus on our purpose from a larger picture. And even if 10 cents isn't a hard number, it's been talked about several times. Clay, are you good with that for now?
Yeah, and just to one little aspect of that as well is the heating, especially in rural, in coastal communities where we have hydro resources and we have very high heating costs. Just keep in mind that at least here in Cordova, and I think a lot of other communities, we can make a lot bigger dent in people's heating energy costs than we can necessarily in their electric rate. This still presents a tremendous cost savings, but the expanded electricity sales helps us with our biggest challenge, which is the economy of scale. So the single best thing we can lever that we have is selling more kilowatt hours, especially of our hydro. So just a nuance.
Well, I agree. And look at bullet number two, because we may want to play on that. We currently have encouraging energy efficiency and beneficial electrification to lower the cost of energy. Beneficial electrification includes, lowering costs by displacing higher cost fuel sources to lower cost fuel sources. But, maybe we want to play with that, or maybe you want to come back with something in that particular bullet that captures more succinctly what you're saying, because I agree with you. I think you have to look at electricity or the lowering of costs of all energy, not just your light bill.
So, and that's the other reason I wanted to strike that kilowatt hour reference, because I brought up at the convening meeting the concept of cost of energy, and I was not focused on kilowatt hours rates, and because we know in many of our southeast communities, space heat is, two-thirds of their energy footprint. So when we talk about the cost of energy, I'm talking about the cost of energy.
Yep. No, I like it. So, Michael, if we could just do something for a placeholder right now on that second bullet, if we just put a dash and put heating, transportation, and then what would be a word for traditional use electricity? Lighting, Clay, help me out. You're a utility manager, so I want to capture what you're saying. We all energy, heating, transportation, and
power.
And power. Okay, fine. Yeah, perfect.
Just another rising piece over the horizon is localized data management too. Otherwise, hosting data servers. Not necessarily for Bitcoin mining, but to support utility operations and locally hosted cloud services. But that's just a direct electrical sales opportunity. So.
Yeah, and Clay, I want to bring that out because I think you're absolutely right. I think we can add that in some of the deliverables or some of the reasons, because I think we also need some higher N2 and N3 for data servers. But I'm right with you. And I think that would be under identifications of some of the recommendations. I'm with you, though. I think that needs to be part of our outcomes. And, Michael, I'll leave it to you to kind of put that in there. We got policy recommendations for coastal initiatives, and there's going to be some policy if we put data servers, because it's not only your N2 that you need really for data servers, but you also need N2 for broadband. But if you have low-cost hydropower or you have excess-cost hydropower, there's no reason why with good broadband or redundant broadband you couldn't have data servers and jobs in Southeast Alaska or coastal regions. That would be just one example of policy recommendations, but there would be others. But, yes. Would that work, Clay? Where it's at?
Yes.
Cool. All right, if we could move along, Michael, if you want to, I'm sorry, Robert, you have anything else to add?
No, I think so. We're both good.
Okay, so, Michael, if you could move us back up to our agenda. Okay. Well, we went through the members and co-chairs. Any feedback on those changes? I'm sorry, from the consultant crowd.
I think the consultant team, we're good. We're here to support you and just kind of reemphasize our kind of roles. Michael Baker, we're here to facilitate the subcommittees and task force and help organize the plan. Black and Beach has been brought on board, through the governor's office to help with any sort of energy modeling or data needs as we look at scenarios and actions that you develop. So that they'll be very helpful in looking at, you know, the reduction in costs.
Sure, and I appreciate that, but just chairing, I just want to make sure if anyone has a burning hand that they want to raise, I always like to hear voices, makes us wiser, so I just want to offer that if there was any comment.
Just a kind of a point of information, this came up at a previous subcommittee too, whether heat was in scope or out of scope at the task force, and I believe during the first task force meeting, Michael Baker wasn't present. It was identified as out of scope, and that was kind of a question that was posed, I believe, on the Rail Belt Self-Committee that were looking at the kind of reduction of, transferring, I think, gas heat to electrical heat. And that was a question we kind of raised with Curtis yesterday, so we're looking for some feedback on that.
Well, I would just weigh in, not from the Rail Belt perspective, but from the coastal perspective. I think I'm going to have to agree strongly with Robert, and I think Clay would also agree that we have villages where there's a difference between heat or eat. It's profound. And so there is no easy split between the two. Oil prices are too high, and if you could produce a reasonable cost alternative of electricity from whatever form, it's very valuable, and I think what the subcommittee needs to tackle with, it may not be so much pronounced in the Rail Belt of gas prices versus oil. I mean, I don't know what the BTU cost of natural gas is currently in Rail Belt versus the kilowatt cost conversion, and it may not be as significant in the Rail Belt, but if you're on, let's say, 10-cent electricity or 12-cent electricity in Wrangell and Petersburg, there's actually a beneficial reason economically why you're not paying $6 for fuel oil. So I think we need to consider the heat, at least in our subcommittee. But I appreciate the perspective of how this is being discussed in other subcommittees. Moving forward, let's go to B, subcommittee administration.
Well, two things. Number one, Clay's hand is up, so I don't know.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see your hand, Clay. Go ahead, Clay.
I think it was up from prior.
Yeah, I was up from my phone, but I logged back here on my desktop here, so I'm good. Thank you.
All right. And I did want to just reiterate on that. That may be good guidance for the Rail Belt, but I think you'll find in rural Alaska, as coastal Alaska, the synergies and requirements to fully utilize generation to maximize its efficiency has an application towards heat in many cases. So trying to lower the cost, I mean, the cost of the energy charge is very often the smallest component in our rural villages. And so it's the non-fuel costs that really drive the rate. And so the only way that's really brought down is through, increasing that denominator rate of sales. So, the heat component, we may not solve it all through, the subcommittee's work, but it is related.
Thank you, Robert. So, Michael, we have the next thing on our agenda is subcommittee administration, data resource needs, file sharing, define milestones and deliverables, identify preferred name for report section. I think the third one is less important than the first two at this meeting. Maybe you can give us some situational awareness of what's going on with other committees and if there is any staff recommendation or how we should start sharing data, accumulating data, requesting data, sharing data, and file sharing.
I'm happy to do so, and I just wanted to point everyone's attention. I'm sorry, if someone's has their mic on.
My audio, sorry.
That's okay. So just pointing your attention to the SharePoint site that was set up for the Alaska Energy Security Task Force. There is an area for subcommittees to, you know, store data and kind of share information related to their subcommittees. There's some information here, but we're also, Michael Baker, working with AEA behind the scenes to start downloading information that they may have that's publicly available. And we're going to be, hopefully there's an email that'll go out later today. We just sent a draft looking for permission to send it through the main info at email, to upload for all the subcommittees data requests, that come in. And we're going to start putting, kind of updates to all of the actions that were identified in prior subcommittee meetings that happened this week into a tracking sheet. And that's under the main task force folder, energy action worksheets and tracking. If you click that, that's an Excel file. And it's essentially just high level. There's six dark blue columns that we're kind of looking at immediately for update. And it's just high level. The first column, action name, and that could just be policy, regulation, program, improvement, activity you're looking to change. A quick description of what that would entail. The implementation time frame, you know, whether it's immediate, short term, medium, or long term. And we kind of have a set number of years recommended. It fits within the kind of the buckets that were talked about at the last task force meeting. Lead organization that would be responsible for implementing, if there's partners or collaborators, and then in action status, if this is kind of a new initiative, policy, or program, or if it's building off an ongoing one. And then this list is meant to be more of a brainstorming exercise. It's no means a final list. So we're also having the option if we want to withdraw an action that's been identified just so we can record it. We also have secondary columns here that can be filled in, you know, as applicable. If there's a known cost estimate for implementing an action, possible funding sources, and we know there's a subcommittee already organized looking at incentives, financing, and subsidies. If there's any energy data needs or requests, you know, that needs to be explored in relation to that action, other barriers to implementation, and then these fields here are more administrative. If the action is assigned to any members, due dates, comments, and if it's been completed. So what we're doing is, you know, after these subcommittee meetings, we're kind of recording these meetings, we're going back, we're updating these sheets, and then based on those recordings and information kind of requested, and then we're hoping to use a portion of today's meeting to kind of talk about preliminary actions, and then I have a colleague behind the scenes who's taking notes and taking a first pass at updating it. But we're looking to have, you know, these updated for subcommittees to start review by, you know, early next week, so Monday. And then the next task force meeting, we're kind of coordinating on a preliminary agenda. But at a high level, I think we're going to have, you know, we're waiting for approval on this, is to have breakout sessions with subcommittees to kind of go over these actions, you know, go through a consensus building exercise, make sure there's agreement, and then a quick prioritization exercise. What are your top priorities? And then, you know, meet as a whole task force and kind of report out by subcommittee what were the preliminary recommendations for each subcommittee. And that gives an opportunity to also talk about any crossover issues or common themes we're seeing across regions or subcommittees. And just to kind of look at them as a whole. So I just wanted to pause there. Any questions related to the data or the action worksheets or kind of the path forward? Jeff, you're muted if you're.
I was just saying, Robert, Clay, do you have any questions?
This is a great structure. And I do have Liz, I don't know if you want to jump into that now, but the data resource needs or not, or if you want to finish the conversation about the structure of that moving forward, if Clay has anything to say.
Yeah, let's go to data sharing or data needs next, Robert. But thank you, Clay. On the setup of the files or anything, you have any questions or any comments?
In fact, I was just trying to browse through the SharePoint now, and it seems really super slow. But no, I didn't have anything this time.
Yeah, Michael, the only question I have is on the data sharing. Let's say Robert has a pet thing that he wants to work on, action. Can each member set up their own subfolder or folder so they can put documents into there so it can be shared, but then it's in a form of organization? Do we have access to be able to set up folders and subfolders?
I believe so, and if you're having trouble with that, definitely contact us, and then we'll coordinate with the administrators.
Okay, great. Great. So that's on file sharing. Let's go to data and resource needs. And Robert, since you did the segue for that, I'm going to turn that over to you for your comment.
Thanks, Beth. So this is kind of aimed at Audrey, but we'll end up in the contractor's lab. So we've done a lot of energy planning. I would be very interested to see, make sure that, you know, through the contractors or directly from AEA, how we can get, links to the reports perhaps, but really I think it'd be helpful if the contractors were able to pull out executive summaries or even fill in the chart from these reports. What have we already learned? What have we already come up with, as far as, known data for, you know, generation distribution. We really don't have a lot of storage except for, you know, Perch Lake here or there, but maybe a battery bank or two. But I think there's a lot of known information that we need to be reminded of that can be uploaded into this chart that would give us a better starting point for using our time to examine how to streamline and move forward rather than to go into discovery.
Robert, Mark has his hand up. He did AEA this morning to talk about some data, so he may have updates relevant to that.
Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. Robert, I met with AEA this morning, and we walked through, precisely what you just mentioned, right, that there is a lot of information already out there, and AEA has a lot of that source data. So, we talked about creating a new folder on the SharePoint site that's going to be like a reference library, and they're going to either put the raw data, if it's raw data, or at least links to locations on the AEA website where you can access that data. It includes the PCE data from the last at least 10 years, maybe longer. Also, all of the appendices that were in the 20 is the document you referenced last task force meeting, Robert, the pathways, energy pathways document. All those appendices, those will be loaded onto the library because they contain quite a bit of data by village, just like the PCE data does. I suggested that if there are, if there's a source where all of the potential hydro projects, exist, that we include that as data. The point is, and I think this would, this is really where we want, where I would like the discussion to go is, are there other, data needs that you have that we could ask AEA for that, that they may have access to or have, exist in the database?
Right. And once we see that, we'll know what the other is. Right now, everything's in the other because it's not on our forefront. And I'm hopeful. Do you feel like between the two contractor teams that some of those takeaways and findings can get uploaded into this so we can not spend time going backwards so we keep our focus forward?
Go ahead, Michael.
What I was going to say, the other kind of information that we started gathering was similar plans or state energy plans from other states that have been recently adopted so we can start seeing trends and actions that they've been identifying. So we're going to have those plans available too. And then we have an Excel document that tracks the actions within those plans, just for reference if we want to include them, or something similar.
All right, thanks. And finally, my last, is like, to me, we kind of know a lot about generation and storage and distribution. We don't know a lot about storage and how it might relate to the scale of our coastal communities with what is available and what might be emerging. And so I think that's where a lot of our attention should be focused. And I know I'm working with Siemens Energy on transportation projects, and they do a lot. They have a lot of knowledge and know of where the industry and world globally is going on storage, and they might be a subject matter expert that we could consider hearing from at a future date. Thanks.
Thank you, Robert, for those comments. Clay, do you have any comments on this? I have a couple, but I will reserve till I hear from you.
Yeah, and just so I understand the state of resource needs, is this for the Coastal Community Subcommittee? Are we advising tangentially the Data Subcommittee, or both?
So the Data Subcommittee has not met yet, so we're kind of operating in a vacuum until they meet. But we're really looking at public data that we know exists that we can easily, get for the team. So.
Okay. Well, let's pump some hot air into the vacuum. So there's two pieces of data. One is the storage collection and operationalization of data, and using AI inside the utility gates, to host our business models. But then for the external data, increasingly, just be aware, utilities don't like to share their data. With the physical data, like your network configurations, your plant layouts, your system maps and schematics, and transformer locations, can open you up to physical and cyber attacks by actors. And then on the operational side, your operational data is subject to IPPs and whatnot, being able to zoom in and say, oh, they're using this much diesel, they're using this much renewable, this is their price points. We can step in and promise to do better and start an ITP in their region. So just be aware that anonymizing data is something that I think a lot of utilities are going to ask for, either their physical architecture data or their operational data. And just a little historical flavor, back when the AEA was the Alaska Power Agency, they actually collected a whole data set from the non-TCE communities, so we had a real comprehensive data set, operating data set for the state. And then when the legislature basically disbanded and gutted the APA, and then later reformed the AEA, that data piece was taken out, and the utility industry has been beating that drum for years and years and years. We need to be collecting comprehensive statewide data for benchmarking, and I'm glad that we have that opportunity now, because we need that for a statewide comprehensive plan. But just be aware of that anonymization piece that I think a lot of utilities are going to require before they start sharing their data.
Thank you for that. And my comments are two forms of data. One is backwards looking and one is forwards looking. So I have a 1947 Southeast Water Powers book that I shared with Curtis. 212 hydropowers in Southeast Alaska. Our government spent a fortune locating, identifying, taking, even on many of them, they took water gauging for a number of years. So there's a lot of data that already exists, but that study was done in 1947. That doesn't overlay the current RS-2477s, the current, 4407 right-of-ways. It doesn't overlay battery energy storage or the way turbines can be done and transmission line to and from. So I guess my point is that there is a lot of good data in the past, and I think that that's really important that we get a core coastal thing of data, because Robert's right. We've done so many studies in Southeast Alaska and in probably the coastal region that, we could spend all day long talking about all the executive summaries of them, but it's profound. That being said, just like this 1947 hydropower, we didn't have jetliners then. We never put a man to the moon, so backwards data doesn't necessarily portend to the future either. It's just that it's a data point to get you there. So where I'm going with some of the future data, it's like this morning I looked at net metering, commercial net metering, virtual net metering. You know, Alaska's probably ranked, some grades are F or D's compared to other states that are A's or A pluses or B's. So I would like to see, like, data going forward. How do we rate to net metering, commercial net metering, and virtual net metering? We have villages and we have village corporations that have profound amounts of money that may want to work with utilities and doing a small solar or wind or subsidizing the local school to go on power, and that needs to be integrated with utilities. So that's one area that I would like to see future data, and it's not just for coastal, but that would be for statewide. Some of the other go-forwards is like where is the integration of BESS, battery energy storage systems, or other energy storage systems helping the smaller micro-gridded utilities, and what are some of the promises, or let's separate from the promises versus the salesmanship vapor of what benefits they apply. And those are just two examples of where I would say, you know, future data or future needs or accumulation of that data and needs could be beneficial toward coming up with a lowering cost of power in our coastal region, but it could also have impacts in the larger AESTF focus as well. So any thoughts on that? I mean, I do see the need for data. I also don't want us to get into a data mining exercise where we're losing focus on the outcomes, which I think are also important. There's an old saying, and we've all heard it, you know, the enemy of good is perfect, and you can always be stymied by having too much data as well. And I think at our levels, we're trying to get some bigger chunks and some bigger recommendations done rather than a perfect solution. But those are just some of my thoughts on maybe where the data future needs are. So with that, I noticed that one of the comments was, well, oh, we have energy policies and energy from other states. I want to flip this to the consultants, Michael or any of your team or Black and Veatch, you know, looking at either net metering and other things, or what other states are doing or other jurisdictions are doing. You know, Clay brought up the energy storage. Clay brought up, you know, integrating AI and operational control efficiencies for smaller utilities, or how does a utility that's stuck on diesel integrate one of these small solar things on a roof of a school or something because the school district wants to invest in it. I'm just trying to get at what are some of the data needs or some of the resources, reading material maybe is all it is, that might be helpful. And I want to kind of turn that to you because I'm looking at where, maybe repeating myself, but Robert was looking at past studies, executive summaries, takeaways, and then also what we could be looking at to the future for data needs.
To speak to the future and trends, you know, the emerging trends in the industry, we talked about this too on some other subcommittees, you know, the possibility of, you know, using that future-oriented trends or data, how would you actually implement that? And would it be through a pilot program to kind of see how it might work in Alaska? And that could be a recommendation that you include in the plan.
Would it be easy? Let's just take net metering, and it's just one category of a future need. What is other states doing? What is successful? What is the good, bad, and ugly? You know, that would be a 3-page paper showing what other states are doing to see if Alaska, where we're at, if we should improve it. I'm just using that as an example, but you could call it X item. I'm just using net metering as an example.
Yeah, as far as our kind of resources and how fast we're moving, I'm not sure if we can provide that white paper, but we can definitely do a scan of kind of you know, where are the industries going from the plans that have been adopted in other states. So, okay. But it might be a little out of scope for what we, our capabilities for this are.
Understand that by that politically.
At the risk of over-talking, but just to share some visibility on some of the discussions I've seen on the federal side, especially from the large, like, balancing authorities, regional balancing authorities, the backwards, you know, the forwards picture has always been a bit of projection or whatnot, but now it is so unclear with this convergence of beneficial electrification and, you know, sweet fuel switching and so forth. You know, to Michael's point, into yours, maybe it could be productive to take a swath of just the high level data that we can use for kind of system planning. So, for example, to your point, we had 12 of those studies funded here in Alaska in the 80s. We've redone a couple of them, found that they were woefully inadequate. The resource is much different. But if we could just kind of aggregate, for example, we have 300 megawatts of potential hydro in the Prince William Sound and Copper Valley region. That's important to know if you're looking at making an eastern transmission loop around the state, because now you can feed in way more renewable energy than the rail belt can use. So I think you could set up a fairly simple construct. So for Cordova Electric example, I can tell you we peak at 8 megawatts right now. We sell 25 million kilowatt hours right now. We look into our crystal ball. We are seeing the beginning, the bottom end of a curve that we think is going to be very rapid adoption of air source heating that triples each residential load that adopts it. So far, indications are that even at 40 and 50 cent a kilowatt hour price points, they can save on their monthly fuel bill. So my internal projection would be I'm going to see as much as a 50% increase in that 25% stuck in my rate class. So we're looking at a, you know, 10 to, if I was going to put rails on it, a 5 to 20% load growth system-wide over the next 5 years. And so we can say right now it looks like we're peaking at 8 and 25 million kilowatt hours. We think in 5 years we're going to be peaking at 10 megawatts and 30 million kilowatt hours. But if you just have those basic metrics, now as you look at bigger things, like if we run the transmission line through here, how, and we connect these 15 communities along the way, what's their basic energy use over the year? What's their connected load? What's their storage current and projected storage capacity, to Robert's point? And just get some rough high-level metrics that we can use in statewide planning and have kind of a level platform that each community can feed in these simple data points. It's just my quick thoughts.
We definitely can connect to it once the data subcommittee needs, but I also just wanted to invite my colleagues at Black and Veatch just to, if they have any, you know, not to put you on the spot, but like any recommendations as you're doing these energy modelings, kind of navigating that uncertainty.
Yeah, I think we will try to incorporate the different range of uncertainty, especially with the case in Alaska, and consider that when we were doing scenarios, we'll put in maybe specifically define that uncertainty and I think project a path that really considers that explicitly. The solutions that best meet the project needs may be different under kind of different assumptions of those factors.
And Hawaii, I just mentioned that, you know, I've traveled Scandinavia and I was I visited several district energy plants in Scandinavia, and I was asking people, how does this district energy work? And they said, no, we don't use district energy. I live in the country. I use air source heat pumps. I said, you don't use fire, you don't use coal, you don't use diesel? No. We use air source heat pumps. We're seeing a phenomena of radical increase in Southeast Alaskan coastal communities, and Clay alluded to it, the air source heat pumps, which is a form of beneficial electrification. You're paying $6 a gallon for diesel delivered to your fuel tank, and you're able to live in Cordova at the current rate of electricity. There's an economic model at play of just market forces where people are moving. And that may not be the same in northern Alaska or rural Alaska or even the rail belt. So I just want to differentiate the coastal uniqueness because of the hydropower resource. It tends to be a little lower cost, but I just want to say that in the modeling, I think air source heat pumps and the modeling of what other, especially Scandinavian countries have done, where they've gone from 0 to 60% or whatever the net use of air source heat pumps are. Heat pumps are going to be big in Alaska's future. The other thing I'll just say with heat, I'll talk about heat pumps for just a second. If Sitka had a district energy, they would evaporate all of their excess capacity in Blue Lake overnight by moving oil. Now it takes money, it takes setting it up, it takes doing it the right way, but they right now have surplus hydropower and they would evaporate that overnight with the district energy. Alaska is at a forefront of heat pumps. We have the Ted Stevens Marine Research Center in Off Bay that's completely on seawater heat pump, and we have the Seward Sea Life Center on heat pumps. So Alaska is already a leading state on heat pumps, and I would dare say with the several hundred heat pumps that are on public buildings, the Juneau Airport for ground source heat pump and others, there's other examples of where, you know, Alaska has a little bit of leadership if it works with the market dynamics versus the cost of oil that it's displacing. So that's kind of some data and some research that I think is unique but would be important for at least some coverage of this particular subcommittee. So I'd like to just table the data and resource because I think Clay, Robert, and I can get on that file. We can create some drop folders. I can definitely share. It's a very large file. It's like 50 megabytes, but I don't know what the limitation is on the SharePoint, but as long as there's no limitation, we can shove things into folders. At least we could get them to consultants as well as to other folks interested and create some of our data. Maybe it's redundant of what already AEA has, but that will allow Robert to move in all these past energy plans. So we have a core built up of a library, so to say, and then if there's articles or white papers or studies or other things done in others, we can create folders and go use the go forward. It's 11:45, so I want to move on. If we could just table the preferred name for the report section, I don't know what that means, but maybe someone can help me out with that, what that means.
We can table that. It's more of that, the diagram that I showed with the different sections and if how your subcommittee is going to align with the section of the report if there's a preferred name. So we can definitely table that.
Okay, so let's talk about milestones for deliverables. I think the data, we consume quite a bit of our discussion on data, and so there's some loading of data that we as individual members can help load to the SharePoint, basically spoon feed, and then the consultants and you guys can look that over, help refine it, organize it, and or help us with some suggestions if we email of like, hey, is there some data on air source heat pumps? Or hey, is there some data on, or here's an article on the current state of affairs for net metering across the country. Is there anything else that we need? Those kinds of things. If we could not only put on the SharePoint, but maybe, Michael, if you are the point of contact for some data requests, needs, or discussion points, would that work?
That would, yeah.
Okay. Great.
Okay, and just to clarify, you know, the most immediate kind of milestone is making sure we just have some preliminary actions to talk through. And just, you know, from the discussion we just had, I think a few kind of rose to the top. And, Mark, I'm not sure if you've captured any so far with your sheet, but we can definitely, for the purposes of the agenda, that is the next section and just working through kind of high-level actions.
I've got a few.
Great. Well, if you guys want to pull up that sheet, I'll open it up to Robert and Clay just for brainstorming ideas on identifying strategies and actions. And of course, that's kind of with the milestones and deliverables. We'll go hand in hand on that. But I want to get the committee members, and then I have some comments. So we'll start from what we've already put up there from Mark and go forward. So, you know, Robert and Clay, I'm going to turn it over to you guys for thoughts. If you want me to go first, I will too.
We can just do that, but also if we just pause now and look at these, and if there's any actions just from the conversation we just had that might have been missed that you want to add to this. And the feel free that they can be related to kind of data requests, because then we can share that with the data subcommittee and even add it to an action for them.
The thing I was going to offer, and I don't know, Dust, if you think this makes sense, but you know, your deliverables that you had identified in that document you shared earlier, to me that sure seemed like many of those are could potentially be action items.
I agree.
Yeah, I think
we can add those after the fact.
Yeah, we can add those. I was trying. I know one item that I just kept elaborating on was net metering or commercial net metering and virtual net metering, and that doesn't mean that's going to be a recommendation. That means we should have the information to be wise for it. And I would just put after net metering, we already have net metering in the state, so it's like, is there changes or commercial, including commercial and municipal? Virtual net metering is where you are on a connected grid, but let's say a town has a bunch of solar, it can move it 15 miles to another utility. That's what they call virtual net metering. It's a contractual arrangement as opposed to actually moving the power. But we don't need to go into it.
And I believe you also mentioned energy storage.
Yes, battery energy storage or energy storage of any form.
I know that there are a couple places around in Alaska right now that are actually using energy storage systems and have measured benefit from it.
Excellent. Yeah. No. Let's put energy storage.
Okay. We do have a hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't see the name.
It's Nick.
Yeah, hi, nice to meet you. Just a quick question. Is there an understanding of the asset status in these various communities? Because when you need to renew your facilities, your equipment, everything else has a end of life status, right? So could there be a potential tie-in with asset management? Because the best time to renew your equipment or change your equipment or swap out and go to heat pumps and things like that is when the existing system is approaching the end of its life. So wondering if that should come into play with regard to the cost benefit analysis, especially for pilots.
Oh, I totally agree with you, and that would be a subcategory where you make the minimum economically viable determination of whether you switch from a current heat source to another one. That's a compelling factor when you're at the end of the life and that oil boiler is costing you several thousand dollars a year just to keep it running. I know several buildings in Juneau that are in that boat. They probably should have switched a while ago. I do think that would be underneath any metric that we would look at for switching, but that may be getting into the more of an individual project needs as opposed to a larger picture, in my opinion. But I agree, it's a component, definitely a component, your life cycle analysis.
The only reason why I'm also mentioning that is that there may be grants that may apply to, building upgrades and things like that, that could potentially dovetail with that, transition then, because you could do a lot of things at the same time. Over.
I agree.
Yeah, appreciate that. And who are you with?
Nick is with Michael Baker.
Perfect. Thanks.
So I'm going to list some few out just because it's 11:52 and we can talk about them, but let's just list them out. One is transmission funding and transmission. Alaska has less miles than Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has a $1 billion grid fund. We need money for not only the rail belt, but we need it for coastal and we need it for rural. So, I know we've had Southeast Intertie. We've talked about we're currently looking at and building a Metlakatla to Ketchikan Intertie. There's the perennial Cake Intertie, and there's others. So that's important. If Cordova had a rail at one time, maybe if there's, like Clay said, 300 megawatts in the area, he could export or move power from his region to other. I just want to put transmission on the discussion for action items. Another one would be regulatory reform, and I want to say in-state and federal, because there's things that we could definitely do to help move projects forward within our state's regulatory regime as well as from the federal regime.
Beth, sorry to interrupt your flow, but Clay had his hand up on the transmission funding.
Clay, I really apologize. It must be the way I use Microsoft or this browser, because I don't see the hands being raised. So I'm sorry. I'm going to let you jump in, Clay.
No, that's okay. You just hit the exact two items that I was going to contribute. That kind of raises it to the level of, the focus of this whole subcommittee is coastal generation, distribution, and storage. But I want to somehow capture the innovation elements and make sure that it's distributed to the whole group. On the transmission, here in Cordova and other utilities, BC Hydro, Orcas Power and Lights, we've got a low cost, a different approach for transmission. And, you know, what we call transmission in our small communities is really distribution class voltages, up to 35 kV, I'll say, maybe 69 kV. But we have a very low cost and a very reliable and a quickly and affordably repairable submarine transmission model that I sure hopes would end up being a part of the discussion as an alternative to armored cable and its strengths and weaknesses. And then the same with regulatory reform. The hydro regulatory reform, I still feel like there isn't a broad understanding of what the non-jurisdictional determinations and opportunities are to develop hydro without the federal licensing, which can reduce the upfront investments by as much as 90%. In other words, you can get your preliminary permitting and whatnot done for as little as 10% of the current, and your development time frame can shrink from 10 years to 5 years. So that needs to be just a one-pager on that gets circulated. And again, those are innovation opportunities that maybe is a little departure from what the approach must take.
Thank you, Clay. And I don't know if that's Mark you typing or not, but when you get done with that, if you go up to 16 and underneath the action description, just after Alaska, put dot submarine cable, so it captures the thoughts that will come back with what Clay mentioned on 16 action description of the blue. I'm sorry.
Oh, transmission?
Yeah, transmission funding. I was going to put the submarine on the next, on the action. Wherever you want to put it. I just want to capture submarine in that.
In this?
In the action description. After identify funding sources, grow transmission lines across Alaska, dot, including submarine transmission. Transmission.
And I would add one more, I guess, underground distribution. I think there's been a lot of innovation in areas there that's been maybe that hasn't been as broadly disseminated and discussed as it could be.
Yeah, you can add that there too, Mark, including submarine transmission, underground transmission.
And I think for coastal storage, I know you said it's battery energy storage and other, but the pumped storage hydro, of course, I think we have to mention that in the context of coastal Alaska.
Is that under storage?
Yeah. So identify successful ESS use in Alaska or applications that would be beneficial in Alaska to include pumped storage, We have mines that have been in many communities. Could that be an air storage? I don't know. Or gravity storage. I don't want to get into the esotericness of it, but there's more than just the battery energy storage, but that's the most common one right now. But pump storage and battery energy storage.
then on the generation side, at least to benchmark the current state of technology, and this would be a action item, hydrokinetic. So that's in river, in tail races, and it's tidal, it's wave.
Is that a whole different category?
Is that a whole different set, or is that under innovation, Clay? Yeah.
Either way, but it's a pretty broad piece, and there's different technologies, and there are different states of commercial readiness. So,
just recognizing we have 2 minutes left, this meeting's being recorded, so if you just want to talk through any other actions, we don't have to wait for Mark to type it. We'll go back and listen to the recording.
Fair enough. Under transmission, I just want to capture the N0, N1, N2. That is real important if you're going to do data servers or any data. It also separates us and makes an argument for us to be first world federal funding rather than second or third world where we currently are, because most places in America do have that N0 level, and I would dare say we don't have any of that in Alaska. So it may be not only a reality, but also a reason to justify funding for transmission. I want to also put in the transmission, the Southeast Intertie. We already have Public Law 106.511 that is an authorization that has not been funded. And, there's other transmission in other areas in the state that I think we could dovetail, you know, with what the rail belt's trying to do. The other thing is, we have, and Clay has this, and we have this in the Kenai and some of the coastal, we are surrounded by forest. So we also need to talk about the Tongass Land Management Plan and how do we maybe propose a renewable energy or transmission land use designation that allows smaller communities to develop federal lands on a more streamlined basis to benefit their community. Now, this would be a Tongass Fed state issue, but it may be a recommendation that comes out of our task force, even though it may be something our congressional delegation has to deal with.
I would add, and land ownership and management is a piece of it, but another action name is tribal, tribal opportunities. So both for developing energy projects, for transmission and distribution siting on tribal lands, for locating or developing hydro on tribal lands, there are some opportunities for land exchanges and land selections from our tribes and regional and village corps. So,
agreed. Great point. I just read a bunch of things from the Grid Deployment Office where they will allocate only money to tribes. So whoever's writing this, if we go tribal opportunities / synergies, because if a local utility was synergizing with a local tribe, there may be advanced benefits to lower the cost of energy in our region or in a particular area of our region. And in the IRA, there's a lot of money that's for tribal lands, which Alaska has 229 tribes. So in our coastal region, we're dotted with them.
Well, and that kind of dovetails into something that workforce development or capacity, human resources capacity.
Yep. Yeah, and I've had discussions with IBW. They would love to have more workforce development because as they see more chargers, more air source heat pumps, more beneficial electrification, we need to also be educating and training our area or our Alaskans for that future. That I was talking to Doug Tansy. I said, hey, the future for beneficial electrification is so great, we need to go out and get sunglasses because it's pretty bright.
Jeff,
I agree with you.
I just wanted to recognize we are at time. I can definitely stay on past, and I think this is a great conversation. I don't want to interrupt it, but as chair, I just wanted to let you know that.
Yeah, so if I'm willing to stay on and finish off some ideas from Robert and Clay, and we'll just finish this task if they're willing. I don't want to short-circuit the public process by having any members fall off and we continue on. But if, okay, Clay has a hard stop at 5 minutes. Robert, can you go on for another 5 minutes?
Robert has already left.
Yeah, we lost.
Robert
has
to go.
Okay, shoot. Well, Clay, you want to finish any of your comments on some of your things? We can always come back to this as well.
Not really. I just think as we look out a little farther to beneficial electrification, we need to look to maritime. You know, the electrification of fleets, that is one of those huge energy consumers that sits down in our harbors that can put very sudden and unexpected demands or provide opportunities. So
yeah, and I would just add in there, if you don't mind, shore power, because it's already in Juneau pioneered it, but it's being talked about in Ketchikan, Skagway, all over the place. And I add shore power to your maritime.
Exactly. Yeah, because hydrogen could be an element to that as well.
Yeah, I was just talking to KPU, and they're talking about how they're planning for what they can do with the shore power situation down there. It will definitely absorb your summer excess power.
Well,
just to put this in, I know what ALMP is at the Princess Dock. It's 6,000 megawatt hours a year, and that's on the low side. It's usually like 6,300 or 6,700. It's huge.
And this is where the holistic thinking is really important, because they did a harbor upgrade here in Cordova that's probably a 30-40 year infrastructure, and I was just able to sneak in early enough in their planning processes to get them to oversize, to go to three phase down each dock and to oversize them so that they could be looking ahead to battery charging or electrolyzers for agriculture production. And, you know, these investments in different sectors, if they're kind of working holistically into a plan, you don't miss those opportunities that have to rebuild it. The same with our distribution systems. The demands that it puts, as we get down into the details, the demands that it puts on our distribution grids and whatnot, in addition to selling more power, we have to look at our, you know, system capacities and whatnot. But anyway, I don't see any more high-level stuff. But
no, and under shore power, Mark, I would just, going back to your old department, I would put electrification of ferries. There's already efforts and studies going on.
Yep.
British Columbia has 6 diesel hybrid electric ferries, and they're buying 7 more. And the reason they're buying them isn't just for the greenhouse gas, but it's dropping their operating costs.
Well, the other thing I was just thinking about is, you know, in line with the rural subcommittee discussion about finding anchor tenants, right? So, you know, if you have a marine fleet, or the ferry system that has power needs in a smaller community, that could be a large tenant right there.
Absolutely. Well, guys, well, what we can do is, I know Clay's got to run. What we can do is clean this up. We can pass this around if this is legitimate to share with outside the public, or even if the public. But if we could get a copy of this, we can add in 2 cents, because it's 100 words or less. Allows each of us to add more to this as you guys go through and add what you need to. And I think this was a great meeting. I think we accomplished a lot. It was very robust.
So we're going to look to get you a copy of this on Monday, and then so the subcommittee can continue editing and refining it next week.
Yep. Okay.
Yep.
And the only thing we really had to cover was next steps with member assignments. We kind of spiced that in there to help us load on the share file and share points. I think we've already talked a little bit with the support and contractor assignments. We didn't get into the granularity of that, but I think we're good. I think we're good to go, so we can break the meeting and get Clay off to the next item on his day.
Well, that's just to throw in the last word. You can add this facility that I'm sitting in right now is the third water source heated facility in the state. They just committed their raw water heat exchanger last Thursday, Friday. So this, I don't know if it's a 15 or 20,000 square foot science center campus that we're leasing office space from is will be heated with water going forward. So.
Well, congratulations, and thank you for being on the leading edge of that technology, which I think is really Alaskan technology, because we're ahead of the country in it. So thank you. Cool.
Thank you. Sorry about the front end.
All right, no problem.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, Michael, if you need to get with me afterwards for any follow-up, just you got my, and that goes for anyone else, just give me a holler or email. Okay. Drive on. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate all the help today.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.